Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Greetings, gentlemen. Welcome to yet another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. I am your host, Scott McKay, at Scott McKay on both Twitter and on Clubhouse, that we hope that you'll join us on every Monday night. Be there or be square, 8:30 Eastern. That's GMT minus four. I host the room called Dogs and Cats Living Together with Cindy Olin, famous dating coach in her own right. The men and women get together and we hash out different kinds of topics that always create excellent discussion. So join us on Clubhouse. Also, you can find me at Real Scott McKay on Instagram. Search Scott McKay for the YouTube goodies. The website is mountaintoppodcast.com. And listen, guys, if you haven't joined the Facebook group yet, it is Mountaintop Summit. It is going down there. Guys of good character, like-minded men, finding out more about how to be better men and to be better with the women in their lives. It's all there for you at Mountaintop Summit on Facebook. With me today is a new friend of mine, a guest who I'm sure is going to bring it in a big way for this particular show because, man, he's running a pretty big operation. His name is Roman Ciparuca. You can call him Mr. C. And he is not only, check this out, by the way, this is what he and his wife, Erica, do. They run high-end adventure travel curation for the ultra-wealthy. Okay. And one of his gigs that he has in conjunction with that larger operation is called Space VIP. And what he does is he helps find space travelers, like space tourists for the three emerging space travel companies. And he's already been successful at doing so, which makes him a pretty interesting cat. That and the fact that, like me, he's traveled all over the world and seen all kinds of crazy things and can walk the talk with all kinds of mad, awesome adventures. So without anything further, Roman Ciparuca, welcome, man.
Hoorah. Thank you so much for having me, though. Lately, I've been called Mr. Intergalactic, so you can add that to the repertoire of Mr. C or Roman. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Has a Beastie Boys ring to it.
I have been doing dances to that song, by the way.
Yeah, you have to fight for your right to be intergalactic.
That's right.
Yeah, man. All right. So talk to me about this gig you have. It started out with curating adventures for really wealthy people, which has got to be just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Let's start from the top.
Yeah, man. And then how did that turn into space travel curation? I'd love to hear the story.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for having me. I started Roman and Erica back in 2009. I actually met Erica working at a super fancy New York City travel agency. And we realized fairly early on that these ultra high net worth individuals needed a larger scope of services just beyond travel. Think of it as one touch point for any lifestyle and leisure needs. So we left and started our own shop and called it Roman and Erica because, well, at the end of the day, we probably lack originality. And Ben and Jerry's didn't think that they would be a multi-billion dollar corporation all those years ago. So we started a business where the goal was to charge an annual retainer and to do anything and everything for our clients as it pertains to their lifestyle and leisure. So think of us as a blend between a really well-connected concierge, a top-level travel advisor, and a personal assistant all rolled into one. So that was the genesis of my career in hospitality or meaningful hospitality. And about 3 years ago, so in late 2018, I was approached by a private space company who said to me, "We hear, Roman and Erica, that you work with the ultra high net worth." And I said, "In fact, you hear correctly." And then they asked us to help us promote missions to the International Space Station for a 10-day trip, which has a ticket price of $50 million. And I happily obliged, and it took me 2 years, and late November of 2020 of last year, we introduced them to the third and final private astronaut that's going up on their first mission in January of 2022. So probably about four more months, and they'll be going up there. And that's how I got into all space-related and space-adjacent activities and why I'm speaking to you fine people today.
Yeah, right. Now, see, if I were to start a company, it'd be more like roaming in Africa instead of roaming in Erica. That would be the story of our journey, which sounds like a lot of fun in its own right. And you've done some of that yourself, have you not?
I have, and I actually lived in Africa for some time. We spent quite a bit in South Africa, and I lived in Cape Town for a while because one of our clients owns a safari lodge in the Madikwe Game Reserve, which is about 3 hours from the border of Botswana. Have you been there?
I have. I've been to both Botswana and Cape Town. And yeah. Cape Town, in my estimation, is probably second most beautiful city in the world behind Rio. I rank Rio number one.
Well, any place that has a city and a beach culture is tremendous in my book.
Yeah, you kind of can't go wrong. So talk to me about the people you work with. Are they kind of picky and hard to deal with? Or are they pretty much over themselves and down to earth, despite being astronauts?
Well, most of the folks that we work with are wonderful human beings. They're certainly demanding, and they have a right to be. But we also at Roman and Erica, we insist on a 3-month trial just to make sure that it's a good fit. We want to ensure that we're working with people that we enjoy servicing, and we want them to make sure that they enjoy working with us. So it's a dual interview.
Ah, very good. Okay, so you have curated adventure travel for these folks and presumably much more, right? Do you ever help them find a date?
Yes, there have been occasions where someone would call and say, you know what, I'd really love somebody to accompany me to the opera. And we're happy to go to our personal network and make an introduction to two like-minded people. So yes, you know, our parameters is as long as it's legal, we're happy to do it. So if it was a date with certain expectations, then that would be outside of our scope of services, if you catch my drift.
Gotcha. Crystal clear. So anyway, on to the meat and potatoes of what we're going to talk about today, I'd like to say, because I'm usually hungry when I do these shows because I'm on a 4-hour keto window.
It's funny. I just had a keto bone broth soup, which supposedly has, you know, 1900 grams of protein. It certainly doesn't feel like it after I slurped it down.
And zero carbs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my 4-hour window for intermittent fasting is much later in the day than when I typically do these podcasts. So I'm usually starving when I do these. But the good news is I'm never burping up lunch or anything like that, like I've heard other more slovenly podcast hosts commit on their shows. So,
hungry figuratively and literally.
Yeah, you betcha, man. Right on.
Hoorah, baby.
All right, man. So what we're going to talk about today is something a little bit fun and whimsical. We have done a couple of futurism shows in the past, and we're going to kind of combine a couple different possible tangents here, a couple angles, if you will, and talk about what it would be like after we colonize space someday to, you know, date and have sex and procreate and have a family. I mean, what is going to be weird about that? What will be business as usual about that? And maybe some other ways we could talk about that that'll be equally fun to discuss. And we're also going to talk about how to be a worldly man. I mean, you know, you have to have your feet on the ground before you can reach for the stars, I suppose. And having worked with people who are uber successful, I'm sure you have a lot to say about both of these subjects. So let's start here on Earth, you know, just for the sake of simplicity. What do you think it is that you have gained the most in terms of understanding people and particularly understanding women as you've traveled the world?
I think what I really love about travel is that it certainly humbles you. The things in one part of the world which are acceptable or not acceptable in another part of the world. The example that comes to mind is I remember I was in Thailand with Erica, and we saw all of these posters of Thai men and women, and they were very light skinned. And when we asked our guide about that, his explanation was, well, everyone in Thailand wants to be light skinned because if you're dark skinned in Thailand, you're considered a poor farmer who toils in the fields on a daily basis. Whereas if you're light skinned, that means you're wealthy and can afford umbrellas and sunscreen, etc. And I just found that so fascinating. Because in our culture, if you're tan, it means you can afford a leisurely lifestyle. So I think it's important to travel the world and get to know other cultures so that we can all be more accepting and less petty, which I think is the problem for a lot of the world's issues today. We're too self-centered. We're too selfish. We're thinking about, you know, my wife, my cow, my house, my money, get away from my children. It's all me, 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 rather than how can I help you, dear brother or sister?
Yeah. And you know, the weird part about that is, in many ways, America has consistently been the most generous country. And when people come to America, you know, they find us to be very generous people. Yet in the media, you know, I think bad news always sells and people are seen as being really at odds with each other or fighting tooth and nail internally. And unfortunately, through social media and the angry people who grab the mic there, that filters over to the rest of the world. And as I've traveled, you know, kind of to mirror what you said, I've gone places where we've been told here in America, they're just evil people and the government is horrible and they're the type of people who just hate Americans. And they've been the sweetest, most generous, hospitable people in the world.
Right.
And what I've always found consistently, and I've said this before on this show, is the people everywhere are usually spectacular. It's the government that sucks, you know, and culture, right, even though it's different and you may not understand it, if you have the humility, which was a golden word you used, you know, you said it humbles you. If you actually are humble enough not to grumble about what you miss about America and start looking for a McDonald's where there is none, like in Cambodia, and eat their food without fearing it before you've even seen it or tasting it yet, and meeting the people and understanding why the trappings of their culture are the way they are, you find yourself not only really enjoying it, but respecting it. And you feel, well, the word is worldly. And I think when you bring that attitude back home, it makes you a more interesting man. I mean, if you hark back to the most interesting man in the world commercials from Dos Equis from years ago, it is years ago.
I love those.
Now, right? Yeah. A lot of those were not in the United States of America. You know, they were apparently some exotic place doing some exotic thing that we rarely do here in the United States, seeing sights that we rarely see here. And when you bring home that kind of experience, it makes you not only more mature and more respectful, it gives you wisdom is what it does. It gives you real world experience that helps you in turn live your life more skillfully. And what that does, it makes women love you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I remember I did two study abroad semesters in Florence during college. And the first semester, I was just a tool. You know, every time they would order, every time we would be in a restaurant, I would order a pizza with extra cheese. And I would say, I'd like a pizza with extra cheese. So the waiter says to me, scusa, cosa hai detto? And I look back at him and I said, I'm sorry, did I stutter? I asked for a pizza with extra cheese. And that was the whole behavioral pattern throughout the course of the semester. I just assumed that everyone needed to speak English, which was an incorrect assumption. And I only realized it a year later when I came back for my second study abroad semester. And I made a point to learn Italian and to engage with the Italians in their native language because I was effectively in their country. And that's a lesson that I pass on to high school students or college students or anyone going abroad is engage, because once you can speak someone's language, you can interact on such a different level. In fact, while I was single, I knew how to say, you have beautiful eyes in probably 25 to 28 languages. I actually know and still remember how to say it in Afrikaans. And as you know, you're talking about women. When you say you have beautiful eyes in Afrikaans is not a widely spoken language. So if you can say that to someone who speaks Afrikaans, the next logical question is, what else do you know how to say? And your response should be, that's it. Maybe you can teach me some more, or I was hoping you can teach me the rest. And then it's on, gentlemen.
That's brilliant. You know, I've said before, if you can just say hello and thank you in as many different languages as you can, you'll break the ice with virtually anyone overseas. But with women in particular, learning how to say you have beautiful eyes is absolutely fantastic. I highly endorse that advice, for sure.
Thank you. In Afrikaans, it's Yechet Moy Ua.
Yeah, don't go around doing that in the United States. It's not a very good pickup line, for sure. You know, in Africa, I really enjoy dabbling in Swahili.
Okay.
Swahili is just such a fun language and not really very difficult to learn. My favorite word in Swahili is actually Swahinglish, and it's Hawayuni.
Hawayuni.
Yes. That's what guys yell to you with their hand raised from the side of the street when they want you to visit their shop, you know, in a town or in a village. Hawayuni. Which
charming.
Is basically, how are you, with ni behind it. And ni is basically a suffix when added to a phrase means y'all.
Y'all?
Y'all. Yeah. Ni, like, hawayuni means, you guys over there, how you doing? That's my favorite Swahili word.
Interesting. Ni is in Mandarin as well, like ni hao ma, you
yes.
good? Question
that's
mark?
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. My wife will immerse herself in Pimsleur, trying to learn a language. Before we go on trip, she's done this with Swahili. She's done this with Russian and she's done this with Mandarin indeed before we've gone on trips. And it's so funny. She'll get off the plane or get off the train and she's got nothing. You know, when put under the microscope of pressure, you know, it's like, oh God, what was I supposed to say? Yeah. You know, we get by. The effort usually matters, definitely. And especially with women, women find it so charming. I mean, if you go to Central or South America, and you start attempting to talk to women, say in Spanish, you know, when you're in Argentina or Chile, and they'll go, ay, me encanta mucho. You know, you just thrill me to no end. And there are so many wonderful ways to say things in other languages that, man, we just miss out on in English. And the more you go learn about those other cultures and how they've evolved and how they do things, you realize, hey, you know what? We got things figured out nicely here in the United States, but there are things that people have figured out in other cultures that really are on another level and a whole lot more fun when we at least give them a try and see what's going on. And meeting people from different cultures, meeting women in different cultures, the one international language above and beyond mathematics, I'm sure, is masculinity and femininity. Women are feminine all over the world and men are men. And I've always been fascinated by that as well. How about you?
Yes, indeed. The interaction between the sexes have always been fascinating. You know, we have Trojan War was fought over a woman, and we can go down the line in history. So I think it's important to establish a level of understanding and really think outside of ourselves to be able to be empathetic to one another, not just women, but also to, you know, men to men as well. And it might breed, or hopefully it'll might nurture understanding and acceptance. And then we can all kind of live as one. And I know that sounds a bit idealistic, but all of the astronauts I've been speaking to in the last 3 years all talk about the overview effect. Are you familiar with what this is?
No. Yeah, man, by all means, let's blast off and fly into space here. Talk to me about the overview effect.
It's out of this world. So the overview, sorry, I couldn't help myself. The overview effect is something that all of the astronauts that I've engaged with all speak about. So it's this actual feeling that you as an inhabitant of planet Earth get when you see the Earth suspended in the blackness of space or universe or the cosmos or whatever you want to call it. And you don't see a planet with borders or dogmas or conflicts. You don't see it in the same way that you and I would see it from a Google map, but you see this beautiful blue planet and all you want to do is just nurture it. And all of them talk about this feeling of interconnectedness that they feel when they see the Earth in this particular way. So imagine if a person of means, a billionaire, for example, goes up there and experiences this overview effect. One could deduce that they might come down and allocate $1 billion or a large percentage of their fortune to clean water for all or save the coral reefs or whatever their prerogative may be. And I just think it's poor form for all of these people in this past July to be talking, you know, this negative rhetoric about Jeff Bezos or Richard Branson going up to space. I think those guys are visionaries and pioneers, and we will stand on their shoulders. But I think it's really interesting to consider that space might be the way that we all connect with one another in a more meaningful way.
Well, both Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson came back from their admittedly very short time in space, having been astronauts finally, saying it changed them. Unless I missed some elaboration from them after they had landed from their experience, both of them didn't say much further on that subject. Now, did they? Or did they?
No, they didn't. And you need to keep in mind that the suborbital experience is literally a 12-minute flight where you get a couple of minutes of zero gravity. What we're talking about here is going 250 miles above Earth, checking into the International Space Station, hopefully with a mission purpose in conjunction with a research institution or doing some really meaningful work and staying up there for a substantial amount of time. I don't know if you – have you heard of zero gravity? There's a zero gravity
yes,
plane.
Yes, I'm familiar with that for
great.
Sure.
So you know that it's a converted 727 where they replicate a lunar, a Martian surface, as well as zero gravity. So I did this for the first time a couple of months back. And, you know, it's about an hour experience, but – the first half of the experience, I was going nuts. I was doing Superman, a full Superman through the whole fuselage of the plane. I was doing, you know, triple somersaults, floating in air. And only towards the end of the experience did I realize that all I needed to do was just push off with my fingertips and float. And that was tremendous. So I'm sure that Bezos and Branson are changed. I don't know how much impact it had on them. I can't speak for them personally. I know that they were up there for a little bit. I don't think that they experienced the overview effect in the same way that some of these astronauts have, because I think they saw the curvature of the Earth, but it was such a tight experience, right? You're up there, you're weightless, and then you come back down. So they had to cram in so much in so little time. And I think Wally Funk, who went up with Branson, said that, you know, it was too short to be meaningful, actually.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think it's amazing because so few people have ever done anything of the sort. So I don't know if I would be so dismissive of it having done it. But yeah, certainly if you've walked on the moon or you've been to the International Space Station, you're going to have a much broader overview effect, I'm sure.
If you go to the International Space Station for 10 days, yes, it's much more meaningful and I would think impactful. I'm certainly not poo-pooing the suborbital experience, but they're different.
Yeah.
But do you know one thing that no private astronaut has ever done in the history of time?
A lot of things.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a spacewalk. So not only do you get to go up to the International Space Station, but
my thoughts were a lot more prurient.
I'm sure, but we have an opportunity to do a spacewalk to be outside of the International Space Station for 90 minutes. So you get to be tethered to ISS for 90 minutes as you orbit the Earth. And 90 minutes is exactly how long it takes to orbit the Earth. So you see a sunrise and a sunset.
So no 100 mile high club, huh?
Well, yeah, this would be 250 mile high club.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't have my numbers exact.
Close enough.
Well, that's amazing. And, you know, even as I go to other countries, I often say to my wife when she's with me, which is usually, man, we are not in the United States anymore. We feel far away from home. And I can only imagine that space travel would hit you right in the gut, realizing how far you are away from home. And yet the weird part is you're really only, like you said, 250 miles away. I mean, that's a drive from here to Dallas where I sit in San Antonio. So it's not really exactly like going 3,000 miles away to another continent, but it still feels like you're further away from home than you've ever been, I'm sure. What do you think is going to happen when a certain number of people finally colonize a place, much bigger than the International Space Station, of course? If we do Like, for example, something that's much more akin to Elon Musk's vision for Mars or the moon. And we have a few hundred people up there colonizing the place. Is there going to be any romance at all? Or should you just bring your significant other with you? What happens when you have kids and they grow up in that environment? What are your thoughts on what life would be like, not just romantically, I suppose, but in any other way once we're out there colonizing? I mean, for starters, to me, I would think it's going to be a serious case of island fever after a little while. It's going to take a certain type of personality, I think, just to handle it.
Definitely a certain kind of person. And so there are two things that I want to address in your question. First is this notion of colonizing, because people are already training for that here on Earth, and that's called an analog mission. And there are opportunities to go to Hawaii or the desert out in Israel, where they replicate a lunar and Martian surface. Do you remember the movie Biodome with Pauly Shore and Alec Baldwin? Yeah. So it's kind of like that. And you get to hang out in a controlled environment, and you have all of these duties and responsibilities, whether it's purifying the water or growing crops for your sustenance, because there is no support for the outside world. And that's one of the important things to mention, because those are opportunities on Earth to experience life on Mars or the lunar surface. The other thing that I want to address is this notion of reproduction in space. And this has so many different tentacles, and I find it to be fascinating, just because if you consider, if we're meant to do deep space travel, let's put aside the notion of getting into a black hole or a wormhole. I'm not really good at physics, nor do I understand those concepts as well as I should potentially, but if we're going up there and we're going to go deeper into space, then we would effectively need to go up there, man and women, and we would need to fornicate in space. We would need to give birth in space. Those children would need to be raised in space, so that way we can pursue deeper progress into deeper space. And it's been interesting, because one of the folks that I'm talking to now who's interested in going up there, he's discussed his mission purpose potentially being human reproduction. And that's been really limited, or the science and the research has been really limited in that sphere, simply because you don't have too many volunteers who are saying, okay, I'm happy to go up there, copulate in space, and then let's see how the gestational period shakes out. The most they've done is they've taken fish embryos and some fruit fly cells up there to see how they would fare, but it's been fairly limited. So this is a really interesting topic that certainly deserves to be flushed out and unpacked a lot further.
Can you imagine a time when there are children being born who've never been to Earth?
Can I imagine? Yes, but I have a very robust imagination.
Well, you know, from a purely societal perspective, I'm thinking more in terms of, say, Logan's Run culture than, say, 2001 Space Odyssey culture here. Instead of it being like a NASA thing, I'm thinking of it being a human thing somewhere along the lines. But we have to contain these people somehow, and everything's going to be in a controlled climate, you know, because we can't just live outdoors in Mars or the moon, you know. And I'm wondering if there are going to be like privacy rooms where people can have sex, or everybody will have their own private quarters, or, you know, if there's only like 100 or 200 people up there, you know, they haven't achieved the Logan's Run thing yet, right? And if anybody's never seen the movie Logan's Run, it's an awful lot of fun. It's a pure fantasy movie where basically the world has been destroyed. It's uninhabitable. They live in a bubble. There's not enough room for everybody. So you have to die on your 30th birthday in this big blaze of glory, literally, this ceremony that they have. And it basically talks about how people try to run away, because the rumor is there that the Earth actually is inhabitable, but they're trying to shoot and kill everybody who tries to escape the bubble. And meanwhile, they're having sex and doing all kinds of weird social things, perhaps without the guys shooting each other because they're trying to get out of the bubble. I just picture a culture where we're trying to create a utopia because we have so few people to create it with that, you know, ostensibly it seems like it could happen. And meanwhile, I'm just so sure that the typical catty social troubles will happen and people will start sleeping with each other. And then you can't get away from each other because you're stuck with each other on Mars. Man, it's going to be a really insane thing, probably with a lot of unforeseen results, don't you think?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're in talks with a company now called Orbital Assembly, and they're in the process of putting together a intergalactic hotel with a lot of private rooms for intergalactic fornication. Yes, indeed.
Wow. So lots of other folks are way ahead of us, aren't they?
People are thinking about, you know, having condos and hotels up there. It almost reminds me of The Fifth Element with Bruce Willis, where they go to another galaxy for vacation. Do you remember that?
Yes, absolutely. Another great example.
Flossed in Paradise.
Flossed in Paradise. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, time is running short. We could talk about this and have a whole lot of fun. I'll have to have you back on the show. And maybe you can bring your friend with you who is planning a Hotel Mars, specifically with the vibrating beds, on an hourly basis.
I didn't say vibrating beds, but I'm sure we can build that in by special request.
Well, surely they would be available hourly, these rooms, in the fornication hotel. Fantastic, fantastic stuff. At least there wouldn't be roaches, we hope.
Nope.
Unless we brought them with us. Yeah. His name is Roman Ciparuca. He is the head of Space VIP, and he spends a lot of time thinking about sending you and I out into outer space, which is a very good thing. Very interesting cat for sure, as you guys have already found out. What I want to do is send you to a special URL that I've set up so that you can visit Roman's site, which you got to do. It's just big fun. It is mountaintoppodcast.com/space. Because we've never done that before. Now, the actual URL is simply spacevip.com. It's the name of his site, but I set the URL up for you anyway, because that's what I always do. Man, Roman, what a fun conversation. It went in all sorts of different directions, and I want to have you back on and discuss this more. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Really great to be here.
Yeah. And guys, you will have a great time also when you visit mountaintoppodcast.com. Visit our sponsors, which are Origin in Maine. Jocko Willink's company will set you up with the best exercise training gear, the best supplements, including the greatest protein powder you have ever used. And don't forget the jeans and the boots, which are the best I've ever owned. I wear them all the time. They fit like a glove, both the jeans and the boots. Great stuff. Made in the USA always. Also made in the USA is Hero Soap. The best soap you'll ever use. You will smell like a man, be clean, no artificial ingredients to mess up your health there, and also the greatest body wash you've ever used. Hero Soap gives a certain percentage of their profits to wounded veterans, by the way, if I've never told you that. I think I have, but it bears repeating. You can go to Origin in Maine by visiting mountaintoppodcast.com/origin, and you can go to Hero Soap by visiting mountaintoppodcast.com/Hero Soap, or just click on the link from the website at mountaintoppodcast.com. Also at mountaintoppodcast.com, you can sign up to talk to me for free for 25 minutes. Hey, gentlemen, fall is upon us. I can't believe September is already here. We're in it. It's time to get your nose on the grindstone. Get about the business of doing what you want to do, building those adventures for yourself you know you deserve, absolutely maximizing your abilities as a man, your potential as a man, and especially getting the right woman in your life, finally. No more dinking around, gentlemen. I'm here to help you. I've helped other men for over 15 years now, going on 16 years, and you're next. You will be the next success story. It all starts with a 25-minute call, which you can organize for yourself by clicking the button either at the top of the mobile page or in the upper right-hand corner if you're on a desktop. Click on that 25-minute free button, get on my calendar, and let's talk about where you are right now and where you want to be. That and so much more is there for you at mountaintoppodcast.com. And until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from XY Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by XY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free XY Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.